From the KTOO newsroom, I'm Ryan Cunningham with a local and statewide news update. One vote. That's the final margin of victory for Bart LeBon. He will be the state representative for the district representing downtown Fairbanks. The Alaska Supreme Court Friday upheld the results of a recount that left LeBon, a Republican, ahead of Democrat Catherine Dodge. Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitcherman reports.
LeBon says he's relieved.
I'm glad that this part of the election is behind me and I can now move forward to the business of representing House District 1.
The lead repeatedly changed both on election night and in the following weeks through the initial ballot count and a recount. It ended with 2,663 votes for LeBon, 2,662 for Dodge. In a statement, Dodge says she respects the court's decision. She urges every Alaskan to, quote, remember the significance of each and every vote and how important it is to exercise our right to vote in every election, end quote. Dodge had challenged the findings of the Division of Elections on four ballots. The Supreme Court justices heard oral arguments Friday morning. Justice Craig Stowers told Dodge lawyer Tom Amodio that one voter who supported Dodge changed his registration to another district when he included his business address in his permanent fund dividend application.
So if he was disenfranchised, and I'm not sure that's the right word, but he disenfranchised himself. It wasn't the division that did that.
Well, I guess that's one way of looking at it.
The Supreme Court issued a short two-page order affirming the recount results 3 hours after the hearing. The court will release a full opinion in the future. LeBon's win means there are 20 representatives who have signaled interest in joining a Republican-led majority. 19 members are interested in a caucus similar to the current, mostly Democratic majority. Kenai Republican Representative Gary Knopp wants a bipartisan majority with a balance between Republicans and Democrats. Healy Representative Dave Tallarico would be the speaker if the Republicans can organize a majority.
I'm very pleased with the ruling, and I know it was one of those things that I think everyone was kind of anxiously awaiting to get the issue resolved.
Tallarico says he hopes LeBon's election will help his caucus attract at least one more member to form a majority. He says he'd welcome Knopp back, but doesn't see Knopp's proposal for a bipartisan majority as workable.
I personally don't see it as being something that you'd be able to do in a short period of time. It might be something that you'd want to plan on and work on and build maybe even over the course of more than a year to try and put something like that together.
As for LeBon, he says his focus is the state's fiscal situation and that his experience as a banker will help.
I believe I could bring some good thinking to the table about financial matters, and I have a depth of life experience in Alaska that I think will help.
LeBon will be sworn in with the other new legislators on the first day of the session, January 15th. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
Seven people have submitted applications to be considered for the District 1 Juneau Assembly seat held by outgoing member Jesse Keel. Voters elected Keel to the Alaska Senate in November. That means Keel must resign his Assembly seat. He was reelected to a third three-year term on the Assembly in October of 2017. Keel said Thursday he doesn't plan to endorse anyone, nor does he plan to vote on his replacement.
I'm not going to be particularly involved in their selection, the remaining members' selection of a replacement. And I think that's important. It needs to be the other folks elected by the people to serve on the Assembly who choose that replacement to serve.
Candidates for Keel's seat must reside in District 1, which includes downtown Juneau, Douglas, North Douglas, Lemon Creek, and the airport area. The application closed on Wednesday. According to the city clerk's office, the candidates who submitted applications are Eric Forst, Alicia Hughes-Scandes, Christopher Peloso, Melanie Shivens, Teresa Yvette Sotai, Martin Stephen, and Kate Troll. The Assembly Human Resources Committee will interview each candidate next Thursday on January 10th. Keel will resign at the special Assembly meeting on January 14th. Then the remaining eight members of the Assembly will vote on the new member. Whoever they choose will serve until the next municipal election in October. Voters will then decide who finishes out the final year of the term. Keel said he will continue working with his colleagues on the assembly and his new role.
It's incredibly rewarding work, and I'm looking forward to taking it on at the state level, but I'm really heartened at the group of people who will continue to do that at the city as I move elsewhere.
Keel will officially take his Senate seat when the Alaska legislature convenes on January 15th. The Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority Board approved its largest land exchange to date yesterday. Through the deal, up to 40,000 acres of land in and around Southeast Alaska communities will change hands. KTOO's Adeline Baxter has more on how those lands will be used.
The land exchange is the culmination of more than a decade of work by stakeholders. It took acts of both Congress and the Alaska legislature to make it happen. Once all is said and done, about 18,000 acres of land owned by the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority will be swapped for roughly 20,000 acres of U.S. Forest Service land.
We don't know the exact acreage because it's based upon equal value, so we'll see in the end.
That's Wynn Menefee, executive director of the Trust Land Office. The Mental Health Trust owns land all over Alaska, and its goal is to use them to generate money to pay for services for beneficiaries. Often, that means logging and mining. But some of the trust lands in Southeast border residential neighborhoods and sites for outdoor recreation. That includes about 3,000 acres on Mount Jumbo, a scenic hiking destination in Juneau. The same goes for Deer Mountain overlooking Ketchikan and similar parcels near Petersburg, Sitka, and Wrangell. Those lands will now be owned and protected by the Forest Service. Here's Forest Service spokesman Paul Robbins Jr.
All the lands that we're receiving are going to be lands that people can access and recreate on, whether it's remote recreation or semi-remote recreation. We are supposed to manage these lands for that, including the development and maintenance of recreational trails.
In exchange, the trust receives federal lands on Prince of Wales Island for logging. They also have a contract with Viking Lumber on Prince of Wales, one of the last working sawmills in Alaska. With that deal, the trust expects the 10-year sale of old-growth timber to generate up to $15 million. And that's just some of the land involved. Menefee says the entirety of the land they're getting from the Forest Service will generate millions more in the decades to come. He says the exchange is a win-win. They gave up lands communities didn't want to see logged, and now they can use existing logging infrastructure on Prince of Wales.
And so this puts us in a situation where we can actually make revenues from lands that we get through this exchange, which will help the beneficiaries.
While residents in those communities may be relieved that nearby lands will be protected, some on Prince of Wales view the exchange as just another instance where they bear the burden of resource development. Cheryl Fecko has lived in Craig, Alaska for nearly 40 years. She says she and many of her neighbors are concerned by the impact logging has on species like salmon and deer, which many of them rely on for food in the remote community.
We have over 1,000 miles of roads and a patchwork of clear cuts and various stages of regrowth, but honestly, I think that's kind of reason to maybe not go immediately to Prince of Wales instead of always just using Prince of Wales as kind of the sacrificial lamb, the Tongass.
Menefee says the smaller first phase of the land exchange should finalize later this month. He said Viking could begin processing lumber by February. In Juneau, I'm Adeline Baxter.
The Ketchikan City Council voted unanimously Thursday to support the city and borough of Juneau if it chooses to appeal a recent ruling by a federal judge that limits how communities can spend cruise ship head tax funds. The vote came after an executive session. The motion states that the city of Ketchikan will file an amicus brief, also known as a friend of the court brief, in support of Juneau's potential appeal and will help finance that appeal with an initial amount of up to $100,000. Two U.S. senators have proposed legislation that would give federal aid to Alaska residents and others across the country to replace inefficient wood stoves. The Fairbanks Daily News Miner reports the Alaska Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski and Delaware Democratic Senator Tom Carper introduced the bill last month that would help create a grant program through the Environmental Protection Agency. And finally, Alaska has begun issuing licenses compliant with national proof of identity standards. The Anchorage Daily News reports the Alaska Division of Motor Vehicles has made available across the state licenses that follow guidelines under the federal Real ID law. You're listening to KTOO Juneau. This has been an update from the KTOO Newsroom.